Welcome inside 254. Let's close the office door and start the conversation.
The talk around the table this week is about community, and we should say that we are working on the assumption that all of us share a value that community matters. So we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about what community is and why it's important. What we're going to do is pivot to how to build community, how to think about community, and what role communities serve in our communities.
And how to find your own community.
Yeah, absolutely. And how to find your place in one.
The first thing I want to talk about is a strategy that I use all the time in the union, in KU AppScuff. I ask people to do things one-on-one, over coffee, lunch, a beer. Every person I've approached in this time-intensive and personal way has agreed to my requests, whether it's run for an office, take the lead on a project, serve on a committee, be the chair of a committee. I find that I've done this my whole life, but specifically in this role as union president, I find it extremely useful to have a sit down face to face one on one. It takes more time. It's herding cat scheduling, but it is
a big ask.
The big ask, it's much more effective, I have found, doing the one on one, because I think it shows somebody that you care enough about them to have a sit down face to face. It's not impersonal. It's very personal. When you're sitting across the table from someone and saying, I could really use your help.
Yeah, that's a good one. I could really use your help.
Here's how I see, you know, your qualities and why you make a good fit for this. And I would really like you to consider please doing whatever, fill in the blank. And I kind of want to knock on wood, because I'm afraid I'm going to ruin my track record. But almost every time I've done this, the answer has been yes. A couple times it's been no, but for really good reasons.
But I think part of that is don't be a jerk, right? Like, you're not a jerk. So people say yes to you because you know that you will. And this is important with any kind of ask in community building. You will not be careless with their time. You have established goodwill and put a lot of goodwill into the goodwill bank. And I know as the person who's on the other side of those asks, not necessarily from you, but if somebody I know is going to care enough about me as a person to ask me specifically to do something, I'll probably say yes. So that a lot about community building is getting people to say yes and buy in. And so what you're saying is that one-on-one personal ask is really the way to do it.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, I don't think it matters what community we're talking about.
Nope.
Any community. So just because I'm a union president doesn't mean this wouldn't apply to something in your neighborhood or something at your kid's school or even an organization that you're part of. Just that face-to-face personal touch makes a difference. It matters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And also having a lot of goodwill in the goodwill bank, yeah, I think is something that I really rely on with community building. So something that I learned when I attended the KU political boot camp was how to create a community, how to do grassroots organization. And we had an expert there on that. And what this expert talked about was starting with a small group of people as your core. So I think people think that a community needs to be big right away. And what I learned is that a community can become unwieldy really quickly. So you need to start with that core group of people, have that meeting with five people that are interested in the same thing as you, and then build from there. Let those five people create the basic tenets and beliefs and missions of the group instead of waiting until you have 100 people, because then you will never be able to have a mission because it will be herding cats. So start with the small group. Find people who care about that same exact issue as you. And you can use social media for that. It can be a group of friends. It can be at a dinner. But how does that small group start? Then once you have a mission and once you have objectives, ask everybody to bring two people. Just like I would ask you to share this podcast with two people. That seems specific. It seems possible. It seems real. And then when everybody brings two people, and I was that plus two just recently for a huddle, then that's how you build those larger networks of people. And then you can start delegating to them. But if you don't start with that core group of people, everything will fall apart at the seams. And the Women's March even started that way. So that can move out to a million people if need be. However, you just need to start with that core. So if you're going to build a community in your neighborhood, in your school, whatever it is, finding those people that are willing to sit down, work through all the mission and core belief statements of it, and then go from there. Otherwise, it's going to get too big, too fast, and then it falls apart. And that has happened so much. I mean, that happens in the feminist movement all the time.
Yeah.
So really having that core matters. That's what I took away from thinking about how to be more politically engaged in a smarter and more efficient way.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, you do have to, especially if you're sort of finding or looking to build your own community, it's real important to remember you can take small bites. It doesn't have to be huge all at once. And in fact, it's bad if it is, right? Because right. It will fall apart. I want to say, too, that it's important once you do get started in a community, if you're part of a community, you've joined a community, or you're starting your own community of sorts, whether it's politically or at work or for activism or personally, it's really important to express thanks, appreciation to those who help you, who come, who show up, who participate, and who contribute, whether it's ideas or tangible actions. It's really important to show your appreciation and actually say thank you. Positive appreciation, emails, phone calls, a face-to-face, a thank you card, they're really, really important. People like to be seen, and they like to know that you see what they did. So we all enjoy being recognized and being thanked, and how infrequently are we all thanked and appreciated? So it really stands out if you take a moment out of your busy life to say thank you to someone who helped, who contributed. It's also important for reciprocation. I mean, appreciating your community puts them in a mindset to appreciate each other and see each other's strengths and skills. So you end up with a stronger and more committed team within your, it's a positive feedback loop. It works.
I cannot stress enough the importance of gratitude. I have a box of thank you notes at my desk at work. I have a box of thank you notes in my school bag. I have so many boxes of thank you notes at home. And now that I have a little more money in my pocket, I also have a stash of $5 Barnes & Noble gift cards or $5 Starbucks cards. You know, it goes a long way saying thanks. Hey, get a cup of coffee on me. Thank you so much. I would love to take you out for it myself, but I can't. So here, please do this for yourself and know that I see you and I appreciate what you did for us. The thank yous are, I see them on social media. I see communities doing this more and more of lifting each other up and supporting each other and recognizing the challenge and giving each other little treats. You know, I just sent my friend Domino's Pizza the other night for dinner because she's doing the struggle.
That's
right?
So sweet.
And you can, but you can go online and order Domino's Pizza. And I just sent her a text message and I was like, dinner's going to be at your house at 6:30 tonight. That's what we can do for each other, because I know that we all feel really tired and dragged down by a lot of what's going on. So how do we support each other in our communities? How do we show up for each other? It doesn't need to be financial, but there are little things that we can do that are really easy. You can send little gifts through Starbucks. You can, you know,
just
donate $5 to something in somebody's name. Right. But it can also just be
or
a
just
card.
An email.
It's the words that matter.
I mean,
the
send
words
an
matter.
Email yes. saying just the subject line, thank you.
Yes.
And then spend a sentence or two telling the person why you appreciated
right.
whatever
and what they
did
well. And
yeah.
what they did well. Because you and I know we do not get told that enough.
We thank each other all the time.
We do.
So
yes, we do.
We
leave each other little
network.
Treats and we do little things for each other. And sometimes that's all we need to do to get through yeah. the day is just to get that one little breath of air.
And you
that's
know how
need.
That feels.
Oh, it feels great.
Like when
feels
it's
great.
Not, I mean, it's wonderful when we do that for each other, and it is important. But imagine, like, you know what it's like when somebody from outside our sort of your inner circle, and you get some random thank you note from a student or from a colleague or from, you know, for me, someone in the union that I helped. It comes out of the blue.
Yes.
I don't expect it. I'm not doing this because I expect thank you and
right,
appreciation,
right.
but damn, does it feel good
right.
when I do get that heartfelt note that says, you really helped me through this, or thank you so much for your support, or whatever it is. It really gives me chills and it really lifts me up in the moment, because I think what we do a lot of, and really I'm talking to our audience too, a lot of what all of us do can be really hard. There's a lot of heavy lifting that goes on in the world, and we carry a lot of that on ourselves. And so when someone in our community reaches out and says, hey, thank you so much, and here's why, it really, it's like it's a breath that gets you through the next the next day.
It sustains your community when you show gratitude. It does. It's the only thing, again, is that putting the goodwill in the goodwill bank. We need to do it. We need to remember to do it. It's not hard. Just get a lot of thank you notes, have them everywhere so that in that moment you can write it out and just say thanks, and you'll give that person that breath in your community for the day.
And then just the final thing, you mentioned the expert. That's Chris Ayala. He's our state organizer for AppScuf, and we have an expert extra coming up with him. I had a chance to sit down with him. He generously donated some of his time to us. And so that's
again.
Again, he donated time to us. So he's, I'm going to put that expert extra out. We'll probably put it out the week after this episode airs. But I found a book called The Art of Community by Charles Vogel. And so the idea is a lot of us, we try to reach out and find communities. So there are ready-made communities that are there that we can just join. And you think that that might be a good strategy. It would be easier to do that. But in the end, I think a lot of us find it's hard to find a community that is sort of ready-made for us. There's maybe something that's missing, or we don't quite fit in, or it doesn't feel quite right, right? I think we've all had that experience of, I just want to find a community to join, but then it doesn't quite click.
I feel that way about all the ones that have popped up, like the huddles and things. They're just not connecting with me as much. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're there, but yes, that kind of feeling of being on the periphery of those things, I feel that.
And he writes about that in this book. One of his antidotes to that is, well, don't be afraid, build your own. And his strategy to build your own is you find something that you like to do and do it often, and then you invite others to join you if they like doing that too. A quote from the book, he says, "What works for you and your members will not work for everyone. Success will reflect your values, priorities, or growth. You have to bring your own creativity and experience to the work." This is from the section on crafting community. He also says, "Community is strongest when it attracts and supports like-valued people." Notice he says valued.
Not like-minded.
Not like-minded, right? It's not about minds, because I think something like the Women's March, and I mean, we were there, I completely support it, I thought it was great, but it wasn't a community.
Right.
It was like a march. Minded, it was like-minded people with a common goal and a common purpose, but it wasn't a community. And here's where his definition of community comes into play. This is why it sounds like I'm parsing, but I kind of get it. "A community is a group of individuals who share a mutual concern for one another's welfare. So because members share values, the community helps to answer three important questions. Who am I? How should I act? What do I believe?" He calls this membership identity. The idea in a community is to strive for healthy values that encourage members to care for and enrich themselves and others with care, broadly defined. For me, the idea of the Women's March started something. It was important. It brought a lot of people together from diverse backgrounds and ideas. We have a like-minded approach. But then I think the idea behind the huddles is that it grows then out into smaller communities where people can come together and support each other, help each other, enrich each other, and care for each other in ways, right? That's...
Yeah, and the Women's March, I think that they did, for some of us that really read the documentation and the intersectional approach, it did really attempt to put forward a values platform. But I know not everybody was there for that. And I think all the actions that came after the march really did try to manifest those values. Like right now, they're really focusing on women's liberation, or liberation of all. Again, that intersectional value approach. So everybody kind of took away what they wanted from it. And I know most people who attended the march they were like-minded, but maybe not like-valued, which is what some of the folks in the trans community had issues with, right? I get it. I understand. So I really like that distinction between like-minded and like valued.
Right.
You know, a book club could be like minded,
right,
but maybe not like valued. And that's okay if you're open to discussion and conversation. Consciousness raising groups might be like minded, but then in the action that I'd like to see from those groups, they might not be like valued. Right. So for example, like Stand Up for Racial Justice, I very much like a lot of the work that they're doing, and I've participated in a few things that they've created. But I don't love their mission statement that talks about white supremacy. I think that turns people off. And I think I would rather to see their mission statement be talking about whiteness or white privilege. But I think supremacy is a really hard word for a lot of people to get to. You know, we're like-minded, but maybe not like-valued.
Right.
So I think I'm going to really use that distinction to help me think about community and what my different role is in different communities. Because I think like valued probably connects into activism and the actions that come out of the consciousness, which is the like-mindedness.
Right. Like-minded may be the starting point to bring people together.
The march was like-minded. The march.
Anger. Even something that's
even if
not
it was shared anger.
Shared anger. Even if it's something completely non-political. Well, everything's political. But you know what I'm saying? Like less political. Like foodies coming together to have dinners at different restaurants, like-minded.
But I love food.
But it's right. Yeah. I love food, and I love to eat food, and I love to talk about food. But does that mean we share values?
Well, and it so, might right, just it be might, where's the food. Right, values it, would be do you care about where food is sourced? Do you care? Right.
It might it's grow out umbrella. Of the like-mindedness. But then that like valued puts really the heart of any community, I think, on a, it deepens it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think it's good for us to be mindful of the communities that we're in, the roles that we play in those communities. And then, you know, how we can just really be supportive and encouraging and enriching of each other within the community goes beyond like mindedness.
How do we call people into our communities instead mm-hmm. of calling people out? Like, what do we do? How do we stand with instead of for? I think that all those deep rooted questions help us think about what the communities we are in do and what work we want them to do as we move forward and how to sustain each other within them.
Good place to end.
Yeah, let's do it.
Time for Trumpster Fire. Colleen.
Amanda.
We need to talk about how loyal Trumpster followers are.
They are loyal, which is okay. Loyalty is good.
Loyalty.
But it's important to critically investigate things, even if you are loyal to them.
Right. Especially our leaders.
Our leaders need to be watched, just like I watched Barack Obama, right. who I thought was a great president, but still called to account for some mm-hmm. things that I thought were a problem. And also, as I did for Hillary Clinton when she was a candidate.
So let's talk about that accountability lens.
Yeah.
Because you and I think have, and I think a lot of our listeners have a very different accountability lens than people who are loyal to Trump. And here's what I mean. I found a Wall Street Journal article called What Motivates Trump Loyalists? There are three main concerns. This is Trump loyalists who they interviewed, right? So they did a survey, and what they discovered was their three main concerns are mostly economic anxieties. So trade deficits, national debt, money spent on foreign aid, and then, of course, immigration. And I think the immigration is, well, we can debate on where that comes from there. They didn't say immigration, but I know that's a concern for a lot of people who love Trump. Primarily, their lens is an economic anxiety lens. In a Trump loyalist lens, you have to put everything through the economic anxiety perspective. So if it falls outside of that, and then you and I both know there's an awful lot of stuff that you and I get freaked out about and are angry about that doesn't have any direct effect on the economy, which is, at least for me, that's why when we see people who are loyal to Trump, we're like, what the hell are they think? It's because it falls outside of this lens. So you know about The Guardian following people in Northampton County here in the Lehigh Valley?
It's amazing that they're doing that long, extended, and it's incredible. For a whole year, looking specifically at Northampton County as this bellwether area, right?
And
here
it's right north of us.
Yeah,
it's right
in our backyard.
So Trump won that county by 4 points. The same county voted 2 times for Obama.
Right.
And in 2016, they voted for a Democratic state attorney general and a Democratic state treasurer. You know, you put that up against the fact that Trump won by 4 points. How do you put that together? The question was, how do Trump supporters in this county understand his promise to make America great again, right? His classic explanation. This is his claim.
Hashtag MAGA.
Hashtag MAGA. And he
Which
is
sounds like maggot.
And whether he is seen by these people in this bellwether county, is he seen as delivering on his promise? So remember the economic anxiety lens.
Which is a completely reasonable
it is.
Lens.
It is
I
a
legitimate. Understand that.
We should all actually have an economic anxiety lens. But for me, the problem isn't that I don't have an economic anxiety lens. It's that it doesn't take center stage dominating everything else. There are other things that I feel are important. So, right. So
we're in a privileged position.
We
that
are.
We can care about social issues. And
right.
I understand that if you are not able to feed your family and you think somebody is going to be able to help you do that, I don't necessarily understand that position, but I can recognize it.
Right. I mean, it is a legitimate
Right.
Economic anxiety is a real thing.
Exactly.
Right. I'm absolutely willing to validate that is a very legitimate lens. We just disagree that social lens is it's the only lens. It's not the only lens. So the question is whether he's delivering on this promise. So the Guardian went and asked the folks in Northampton County, and here's what they said. They think Trump is off to a good start. They are happy with his governmental outsiders. You know how like our side is always saying, well, he said he's going to drain the swamp and all he has is swamp rats. Well, from Trump loyalist perspective, he has governmental outsiders. So people from business are governmental outsiders, and that's what they care about. So they're not even seeing, again, that economic anxiety. They're not seeing these big business people, these Goldman Sachs folks, these billionaires as a problem because they don't come from the government. Okay, so they actually think that's okay. They agree with Steve Bannon that the media are, quote, the opposition party. So they really don't like the media. That they share that. They blame the press for trying to tear Trump down.
Which is unbelievable. Because if you look at any actual study of the media and what was talked about, Donald Trump got talked about so much more favorably. And I know that if you don't believe in a fact, then it's impossible to show somebody that. And I know that sounds really paternalistic, but it almost feels like, I don't know, I'm at a loss at this point of what to do and how to have a conversation when somebody's talking about something as if it's factual and it's not.
Right. So they also see protesters as petulant malcontents.
And academics. The LaPierre say? That academics are one of the biggest enemies of the state, that we are the domestic terrorists.
We're the domestic terrorists.
So right? How do you argue with somebody if it's so emotional that they would look at me as right. a domestic terrorist?
Both of us. They repeat Trump's accusation that protesters are paid, right? So
wish we were paid.
I would love to get paid to protest. I don't know anybody who's paid to protest. So, and I've actually gone to protest. So I think that is, again, that's sort of the rhetoric from Trump and his camp. And they've bought in and they're not questioning it. One Bethlehem, and I live in Bethlehem, one Bethlehem, Pennsylvania barber rated Trump's performance so far as, quote, fantastic. He said he's making good choice after good choice.
That almost hurts me.
Right?
That's barbs into my heart.
Because when we see the news, we see our feeds and we're thinking, what the? But this is, again, the economic anxiety lens and the governmental outsider lens. These are the things that these people care about. And so when they look at what Trump is doing and saying, everything that we find offensive, they're not even registering. Okay, that's the thing. They're not even registering it. One woman on Northampton City Council called Trump, quote, smart, and she likes what she's seeing and hearing. One loyal woman who's a drywall business owner rated his performance as near perfect. She says, quote, Trump is medicine for the American people. They don't want it. He's giving them the medicine they don't want to take. And in 2 years, they're going to feel so much better.
Wow. That is paternalism at its finest, as if I don't know what it is that I need and I need big government to like tell me. I mean, that seems so
opposition.
Well, it just seems like completely the opposite of what I'm hearing all the time. Yeah. And I know everybody's always trying to look for hypocrisy and, you know, pretending they're confused. But like that honestly doesn't make any sense to me. If somebody knows better than me, isn't that the basis of the entire GOP platform, is that I know better for myself than anybody else?
Right. So I'm not sure. Yeah, exactly. So when I read that, that's why I pulled that quote out, because I thought, okay, there's a big disconnect between, I don't know, what would we call a standard Republican platform and what Trump is doing. He is not doing traditional American conservatism.
No.
He's not, because, right, the conservatives that I know, they're all about less government intervention, more state control, more individual control. I mean, talk to a libertarian, it's like all about you making your own decisions and that's it.
I
can't bring those two things together. And the fact that he's, well, like what the conservatives have said, he's not a true conservative. He's certainly not a Democrat. He's not a libertarian.
And he's not an outsider.
He's Trump. His loyalists have bought in. They have an economic anxiety lens. They have an anti-inside government lens. And whatever he does and says that is within that lens, their view, it's perfect. It's great. Everything else that gives us anxiety, they're not even registering it.
Sure. And I think we all need to remember that when I'm like, oh my gosh, the world is collapsing, that those things don't even matter to other people. But there must be some things that matter to all of us.
I hope we can find something, because right now it doesn't feel like it.
Yes. Transition is hard, I keep telling myself. But those first 100 days have passed. Yes. Only like 1,600 more to go.
Okay. Stay strong, people.
Like what you're hearing? Hey, Podbean listeners, see that green Become a Patron button at the top right of your screen? You can click on that, donate $1 a month, and get a cool sticker, a Facebook shout out, and our undying gratitude. iTunes listeners, we didn't forget about you. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll see a blue Shop Now button. Click that button, and it'll get you to that same site. Thanks for keeping us sustainable.
Let's take a time out for a media minute.
As we think about community building, I would like to recommend the book Rest in Power, The Enduring Life of Trayvon Martin, that was written by Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin and published in 2017. Those are his parents, and sometimes I wonder how they had the energy and the strength to write such a book of compassion. Trayvon was part of a loving family and community, and his death led to the creation of new communities of activism, one that took even his grieving parents by surprise. We can never forget the sacrifice he and his family made. Reading Rest in Power reminds us that community is essential to movements for social justice.
Let's end today's podcast with some activist actions.
Start networking in person. Meet 3 new people this week, somehow. At work, at school, in the community, at church, in your neighborhood. Strike up a conversation with the deli owner. Go to movie night at the community center. Talk to the person next to you in the pedicure chair. But go beyond simply chit-chatting about the weather. Introduce yourself by name. Shake their hand. Ask them about themselves. Be interested and listen. And when you find yourself speaking with someone who you truly would like to get to know better, say so, and then ask if they'd like to meet for coffee next week. Make a commitment to networking regularly, and before long, you'll have a broad interpersonal community that you can call on for advice and support, and who you can advise and support. It all starts with a simple greeting and a willingness to take it one step further into meaningful conversation.
Thanks for spending time with us inside 254. You can find us a lot of places online. You can follow us on Facebook at Inside 254 Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Inside 254 Pod. Instagram, we're at Inside 254. And we're online, where we put links and more information from each episode at inside254site.wordpress.com. You can follow us on Podbean, and please rate us on iTunes. Thanks for spending time with us this episode of Inside 254.